Okay. Good morning, everyone. Perikei Dalet, 14th chapter, which takes us to page 80. The packet that we have is not the entire chapter. The entire chapter is a huge parak, which actually covers 52 psukim, 52 sentences. I don't think we're going to cover that today, but at least we'll begin. See the first 10. Anyway, we're going to now begin with the first pasuk again on page 80. The previous chapter was discussing about the war between the Jewish people and the Philistines, the Plishtim, in that we were greatly outnumbered. And the most famous episode that happened in the last chapter was how the king, King Shaul, went against the words of Hashem, went against the words of Shmuel the prophet, and because of this, basically what he did was he just brought a bunch of sacrifices, but because of that, his kingship would only be for 2 years. Because he didn't listen to Hashem, and the words of the Navi, of the prophet, he ended up getting that terrible punishment that he would lose his position as king. That's what happened in the 13th parak, and as it continued, we found out that not only were we greatly outnumbered, we also had very little weapons. In fact, we only had 2 swords. Only the king, Shaul, and his son, Yonasan, had swords. No one else had them, because one of the decrees among the Philistines was that no Jewish person was allowed to have the position of being a smith, which is the position which would be able to have the potential of making these weapons. For obvious reasons, they didn't want us to rebel against them. So here we are now, beginning of Perikei Dalet, greatly outnumbered, tremendous army coming up against us, as we saw previously, which I made another copy of the map, which is now it's on the third page of our packet, of how the Philistines were gathered in a city called Michmash, and they divided themselves into 3 for an all-out attack against the Jewish people. Things were looking bleak, to say the least, and we had no protection, no weapons. All we had on our side was God. Hopefully that'll be enough. So now let's begin the parak Yadam. Vayhi Hayom, behold, it happened on this day. Vayomer Yonasan ben Shaul, Yonasan, the son of Shaul, said El Hanar. He said to this lad, what was this lad doing? He was Nose Caleb. He was the one that held his vessels. Kalim are generally just could be cups, could be dishes. When it's discussing specifically with regard to war, Nose Caleb, more specifically, as the Masudas David says over here, Clay Milchamto, the one who held his vessels of war, his shield, his sword, so that he took care of, that's what he had. So he said to this guy, Lucha, let's go. Vinavram el Matza Plishtin. Let's go over to the area where the Philistines are. Hashem Eber Haloz, which is in this such and such a place. L'aviv lo higid. But to his father, he did not tell. He told the guy carrying his weapons and his machine gun, whatever it was in those days. He didn't tell his father. Now, it was interesting. Obviously, we have to understand why he didn't tell his father. What was the significance of this? If you look on the second page over here, on page 81, we have an interesting comment brought down, which is in the English part, which is on the bottom left. It's what exactly was he doing? Sounds like he was trying to fight the Plishtim single-handedly, literally, just him and the guy holding his weapons. So it says he acted this way because he was convinced that nothing stands in God's way if he wishes to save Israel. So says the Masudas. That's the greatness of Yonasan. That Yonasan felt that what's the difference? If we're outnumbered now, so we're outnumbered anyway, so I might as well fight them by myself. So he was willing to take on an entire army to attack them, to fight them, which is incredible. But that was the level of bitachon, the level of moon and faith that Yonasan had. Now the question is, why Yonasan? Why would he be the one to take this position? Why was he so proactive himself? So the most simplistic explanation is, if we recall a couple of chapters before this, how did this war come about? Why were the Plishtim interested in fighting us? And the answer is, because, what? Exactly. Yonasan was the one who started the whole mess. Yonasan was the person that went and he killed an officer, or as Masuda Sion says, the tax collector, or a general, powerful individual. And because of this, it got the Philistines so angry that they said, okay, this is our excuse for an all-out, blown-out war. So Yonasan perhaps looked at it as, I started this whole mess, so I'm the one who's responsible. I better finish it. And therefore, he took the responsibility of fighting this entire war. Which, when I read this, it reminded me of one of my favorite movies. It was a movie called Troy, which I don't know if you ever saw it. It has Brad Pitt in it. But nonetheless, there's the war, the famous war of against the Trojans. Troy was based on a person. His name was Paris. And one of the things that he did was he took the wife from some other guy that he hated, that his enemy, against the Greeks. So what ended up happening is this huge army came. I think it's based on a true story, right? But and they were about to knock down the walls of Troy, and before the war began, Paris stood up and he said, "I'm the one that started this war. I want to be able to finish it." And he challenged this guy on a one-on-one, and he almost was killed, which as it continues from that point on. Nonetheless, perhaps that's a similar concept, that he felt the responsibility, he started the war, he didn't want to cause all this bloodshed, needless bloodshed, I'll take care of it myself. And that's what Yonasan perhaps felt as well. Yonasan looked at this situation, and he said, I started this war, I should hold myself to be responsible. Another possible approach is based on the question of the last words of this pasuk. Well, Aviv lo higid. He didn't tell his father. You know, why wouldn't he tell his father? Like, I guess a typical kid. Where were you? Out. What were you doing? Nothing. Like, he doesn't want to communicate with his parents. That sounds like a typical adolescent child. Why would he not tell his father? What's the purpose of this? And not only that, it's brought down that he also didn't do what was typically done, and that we usually ask the Urim v'Tumim. Before we go out to war, we go to the Kohen Gadol, and the high priest wears this garment that the lights shine based on certain letters, and that tells us, should we fight, shouldn't we fight, what should we do? He didn't even ask the Urim v'Tumim. And the question is, why didn't he want to do this? So perhaps the idea is because he understood, again, that he's the one that was personally responsible. When it comes to a war, which the Jewish people are involved in, then you should ask the Urim v'Tumim, you get the king involved. But he didn't consider this even to be a war against the Jewish people and the Philistines and the Jewish people. He thought it was a personal war, and he felt that he had to take care of it himself, and therefore he didn't want to have to get the king, his father, involved. Of course, a more simplistic explanation is that he just didn't want to worry his father, because he understood that going and fighting against tens of thousands of people with heavy armor, he's probably going to die. So he didn't want to tell his father, perhaps for that reason as well. Okay, let's move on to the next pasuk. Pasuk Bet. Second pasuk tells us as follows. V'sha'ol Yoshev. So he didn't tell his father, but where was he? Where was his father? So v'sha'ol Yoshev b'ksei ha-giva. It says that Sha'ol was staying in this place called in Giva, tachas harimon, underneath a rimon, a pomegranate tree. Asher b'migron. Telling us again the exact specific location where Sha'ol, the king, was at the time. The Amasher Imo Kishish Meosish. And the nation that was with him, how big was his army? Must have been huge, right? After all, the king's army, 600. Well, not so big, I guess. But nonetheless, that's how many people there were to fight. We mentioned before, in fact, there was 3,000, which was also not so great. But because we found that Shaul, the king, kept waiting and waiting. He waited for 7 days because he was told to wait by the prophet. The problem was he just didn't wait that whole seventh day. That was his mistake. But he kept waiting and waiting, so his army kept dispersing. They were hiding in all different places and caves until there was nothing left but 600 people. So that's an unfortunate number, and that's how many people there were to fight against this huge, massive army of the Plishtim. So we look over here for a moment. We look at the words of the Radak. The Radak is also on page 81, because the Radak sometimes is so large. Sefer does is it puts it on the English side. So if you see on page 81 by Pasuk Bet, the Radak says Kishesh Meos Ish, 600 people. And the Radak asks the obvious question. The question is, we already knew there was 600 people. We learned that last chapter. Why do we need to reiterate this fact that there's exactly the same amount of people? We already know that. Let's read that question in the Radak itself. Hello, Omar Zeh. Don't we already recite this? We already mentioned this, as it says in the Pasuk. V'yivgod Shaul es ha'am hanimsa'im imo kishesh meos ish. Previously in the 13th chapter, last chapter, and what the Radak does in this particular sefer is it puts the pasuk itself, the verse itself, with vowels, with nekudot. But it says clearly that how many people were in the army? 600. So why do I need to know again, only a few sentences later, the next chapter, that the amount of people in the army was 600? So, im kain, if so, lama chazar, why does it repeat itself? V'amar od, and it says it another time. It seems to be redundant. Ela lohodi, it's come to tell us, says the Radak, ki lo nasu behem od. The significance is, there was 600 then. The problem isn't that there was 600 then. The problem is that there's still only 600. We couldn't muster up and get a single other person to join the army. V'ava pi shahayu lehem v'yilochem ima plishtim. Even though we were now ready to do battle against the Plishtim, and not only that, but Shmuel the prophet also had come, which was the whole reason why they dispersed in the first place, because they didn't know where he was. They thought the prophet abandoned them. But now he's here. The king is here. You would think that perhaps he would be able to gather more people. No. Same 600 people. Unfortunately, the Jewish people were extremely scared, because, and rightfully so, because they were greatly outnumbered. However, there was one person that wasn't scared, and that was Yonasan. As we're going to now see, he single-handedly is going to be involved in the victory, the miraculous victory against the Plishtim in this parak. Pasuk Gimel. V'achia. And there was a person by the name of Achia, Ben Achitov, son of Achitov, Achi Ichabod, right? Ben Pinchas, Ben Eli, Kohen Hashem Beshilo, Nose Ephod. This was the person who was the one who wore the Ephod, which is the special garment only worn by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. The nation did not know Kiholach Yonasan. Not only did Yonasan's dad not know where he was, no one else knew either. Yonasan, who was a very powerful person, the son of the king, a prince, he didn't let anyone know what he was about to do, that he was going to actually go and attack or do something against the Plishtim. He at least perhaps wanted to spy and to see what was going on. So no one knew. And we also mentioned that there's this individual, and his name is Ikavod, which means there's no honor, which is an interesting name. Why would ever want to name your kid Ichabod? But that's what the word Ichabod means. Ikavod, no honor. And that goes all the way back, what we learned almost a year ago, about this child who was born, who was related to a person by the name of Eli. Eli, who was the Kohen. Eli, whose two children, Chafni and Pinchas, were not doing so well in the service. In fact, they said that they had a three-pronged pitchfork, and they used to take extra meats, things which they didn't deserve. they were disrespectful to the women that came to bring sacrifices as well, causing them to stay overnight when they didn't have to. So, what's the significance about this pasuk? First of all, we learned before this, the beginning of the Sefer, that Eli was going to receive a curse. And that curse was that he would lose being the kahuna. He would no longer be the priest. And his children also lose the priesthood. Hophni and Pinchas died during that battle. And Eli, when he heard the news, he fell off his chair and in turn also died. However, Ikavod, no honor, that was the name of this child because all these terrible tragedies happened, including the Arn was captured by the Philistines. He was given this particular name. However, it's interesting that many psukim later, many chapters later, we still find that even though there was a curse to Eli's children, descendants, it didn't happen yet. Because we still see that the Kohen Gadol was directly related to Eli HaKohen. However, we're going to eventually see that he'll be losing that position as the chapters continue. So that's the discussion over here. Now, if we look before we see the Pasuk Daled and move on to Pasuk Gimel, when it says Nosei Ephod, he was wearing this ephod, what is the significance of this apron? So Rashi says on page 80, it's Urim V'Tumim. Again, because generally what happens is that you want to ask God, am I going to win this war? You know, it's a good question. You know, if I'm going to lose the war, if I know I'm going to lose the war, then I'm not going to fight it. So I might as well, ask God and find out. Because if I'm going to lose, I'll probably just not do it. So that was the significance of the Kohen Gadol. He would always wear these Urim V'Tumim, which, by the way, if you go to there's a university that's their symbol. What does anyone know the university? I think it's Yale, right? Yale University has on it. It's Yale, right? I should know that. It's New Haven, you know. Urim V'Tumim. The significance of why they pick that of all things, but you'll see that it says Urim V'Tumim. That's their university symbol. But anyway, so that's what the Kohen wore. That's what the high priest wore. The Kohen Gadol would be asked to for these lights to come up to determine whether they would be victorious in war or possibly not. Fine. Moving on now to the next Pasuk Daled. Pasuk Daled tells us, Uvein Hamar Barot, which is between the passes, Asher Bikesh, Yonasan Lavor, Yonasan wanted to pass, Almatza Plishtim, to be able to go and to see the Plishtim. And where was this? Moving to 82. Shena Tsela, there was a lot of rocks, it was a very rocky area. Mea Eber Mizeh, Veshena Tsela Mea Eber Mizeh, there was rocks on this side, and there was jagged rocks on that side. It was a very dangerous place to be walking. Lots of a very rocky area that Yonasan had to go through. V'shem ha'echad botzeitz, v'shem ha'echad tsena. It was so rocky that they actually named these areas. They named these rocks. One of them was called botzeitz, and one was called tsena, right? Which is like the rock of Gibraltar. They actually name a rock. So that's how big and how rocky this area was that these rocks were actually given names. Hashem ha'echad matzuk mitzafon mul michmash. So Shane, which literally means a tooth, right? We're gonna see some one of the commentaries explains, if you look in Masuda Sion, Shane Hatzela, why is it called the tooth stone? So if you see on page 82, the top left, Mitsuda Sion, it says, Bole Toya Kishen. It protruded outward like teeth. I guess like buck teeth. I don't know. That's what it means. That Hashen had, it was a very jagged, very dangerous, rocky area that he was going through. So continuing in Pasuk Hey, Hashen Ho Echad Matzuk Mitzapon Mul Michmash. So there was this rocky area was going outward on the north, facing this city Michmash, where the Philistines were encamped. Ve'echad minegin mul Gava, and the other one was facing another place called Gava. Pasuk Vav. Vayomer Yehonasan el Hanar. So Yonasan says to the lad, No, say Caleb. Again, he was the guy carrying his weaponry. L'chov v'naver, let's go and let's pass El Matzav Ha'arelim Ha'ela to check out these Arelim. Arelim, someone who is uncircumcised, which is interesting that that's how he referred to the Pelishtim. We'll talk about the significance of that word. Ulai Yas Hashem Lanu. Perhaps, maybe Hashem will be with us. Ki Ein L'Hashem Matzor L'Hoshia Barav O Bimat. Because the truth is, Hashem does not really care determining, causing a person to receive salvation, to be saved, whether there's a lot or mat, or a little bit. In other words, it doesn't make a difference if we have 600 people, 1,000. There are hundreds of thousands of people. A lot of people in this army. So what's the difference? We're so small anyway. Maybe we should just fight ourselves. What's the difference between 600 and 2? Right? Well, a little bit of a difference, but it's either way, it's a nace. So a miracle is a miracle. So if God's already going to perform a miracle, so he'll perform it with 600 people fighting, or two people fighting, right? Hashem will not withhold his salvation whether there's a lot or a little. Now here you are, you're a simple guy. Now you have this powerful guy by the name of Yonasan, and you're holding his weapons. And I guess you have to do whatever he says, but you're probably thinking, this guy's nuts. And there's no way we're going to win this war. How are we going to win? It's just me and you against a huge army? Most people would say, well, maybe not. That's not what Pasuk Zion says. Yarmelo Nosek Caleb, this is what the guy said. They don't even give him his name. He's just an insignificant guy. But listen to the level of bitachon faith of even a simple person carrying weaponry. Osek kol asher b'levavecha, will do whatever's in your heart. Netei lach hini imcha k'levavecha, I'm with you. Whatever your heart says is exactly what I'll do. So there's no problem. You want us to fight? Yeah, no problem. I'll fight with you. Right? I wouldn't want you to go alone. Then that would be, you'd be terribly outnumbered. But now we're doubling our army. It's not just one. Now we have two people. So I'll help you out. But it shows an incredible faith that not only have a great tzaddik, but even a simple person carrying the weapons of Yonasan, he was willing to do whatever he was asked to do. And one could ask, well, how could he possibly think this? How could a person be so irrational? Now, one of the things which is interesting is you'll notice that I underlined at the beginning of Pasuk Vav, Yonasan. Now, if you have looked, Yonasan is actually spelled without a hey. So, of course, what is the significance of hey? Hashem. Yud and a hey, those first two letters, means that Hashem is with us. And therefore, we're able to be victorious. And he saw this. And perhaps that was also the message of what Yonasan was telling this guy. He was saying, let's go to these Arelim. What's this? What do you mean? Who cares? They're Arelim. They don't have a Brit Milah. What's the significance of that? The idea is that a person who has a Brit Milah is entered the Bris Shel Avram Avinu and has a certain connection and relationship and protection from Hashem. These people are Arelim, which means don't worry about them. God is not with them. God doesn't care about them. However, us, look at me and look at my name, Yehonasan. Hashem is with us, Yud and the Hey together. So Hashem is with us, and therefore, because of this, the person who is Nosei Caleb holding his weapons, he said, you know what? You're right. We're able to fight, and I think we're also able to win. Fine. Let's continue now with the next Pasuk Ches. For Yomer Yonasan, again, we still see that his name has the Yud and the Hey because he has this divine inspiration. What does Yonasan say? Hine anachnu orim el hanoshim. This is what we're going to do. We are going to cross over these men, these people. V'niglinu aleihem. And we are going to reveal ourselves to them, which is incredible. You would think perhaps they would hide and maybe they would blow some horns and scare them to think that there's thousands of them all around. You wouldn't want to just stand up. The only thing which is on your side is the element of surprise that they don't know you're here. You know what? We're just going to stand up and we're going to say, okay guys, we're here. Which makes no sense. You'd want to be a sniper with a gun hiding somewhere up in a tower, not just revealing yourself. But that's what he said. We're going to go to them, v'niglinu aleihem. We're going to let them know that we're here. However, I have a plan. I want to be able to determine whether or not we should fight or we should run. And this is the omen that I chose. Im ko yomer eleinu pasuk tes. If they say to us, when they see us from afar, they'll see us, they'll know that we're the enemies. They won't know that I'm Yonasan, but they'll know we're Jewish, we're their enemies. Now, what could they say? If they say to us, domu, what does that mean? Domu, Rashi says, is himtinu, wait. Wait for us, ad hagienu aleichem, until we reach you, which means that don't move. Stay there. Freeze. And we're going to come and get you. So what does that mean? That will be an omen. That will be a sign. And when they say this, we will stay where we are, and we're not going to go after them. We're not going to attack them, right? Because for some reason, that omen, if they say those words, which will be a sign, a miraculous sign that that's God is teaching us what to do. So if they say, stay there, we're going to come after you, we're going to leave where we are and come to you, then that's perhaps not a good sign for us. And we're not going to fight them, we're not going to attack them. V'im ko yomru, but if they say to us something else, if they say, oh, Aleinu, why don't you come here? Come over to us. If they tell us to do that, we will do it. If they say, come here, not that we'll come to you, but you have to come to us, if that's what the Pelishtim say, then we will, because that, as an omen, we will determine that that will be a miraculous sign. And that sign will show that Hashem is with us, and Hashem will give them into our hands. Mezel lanu ha'os. This will be to us the sign. This will be the omen that we'll be able to determine that in fact God is with us. So we look at the Radak. There's a very big issue with what we just saw. And it's brought down over here as well, on page 83, that there's a major problem. There's a Torah prohibition against creating omens. You're not allowed to say that if I see a black cat, I better stay inside today, or better not go behind or a ladder, right? All these are such, or a broken mirror must mean that I'm going to have 7 years of bad luck, right? Those are things which a person is not supposed to believe in, because you're supposed to believe in Hashem and Bitachon and not rely on these weird signs and weird omens. The problem is, how could Yonasan, who you think is a pretty good guy, his father after all is a king, how could he have violated this basic concept of creating an omen, which is called in Hebrew Nichush? So if you look at the Radak on page 82, it's the last medium-sized line, which actually begins by quoting a Gemara in Chulin. Omer Rav, it says like this, Rav states, Kol Nichush She'eno Kel Eliezer, Eved Avraham, any omens that are not like what Eliezer, who was the slave, the servant of Avraham, or Kionasan Ben Shaul, Eno Nichush. Which the Talmud is saying, apparently, that Eliezer and Yonasan did something wrong. They did an omen. They did some type of thing which is against the Torah. Now, we just saw who Yonasan was. Yonasan created this strange plan determining whether he should fight based on if they're going to ask us to come to them or they're going to come to us. Sounds, that's their omen. Anyway, so if you read it, this is how you, the way you read it is, any omen which is not like these guys, that's not an omen. Which means theirs is an omen, but yours is not. If it, just as long as it's not like theirs, if yours is different than theirs, then you're okay.
Which, if the intent is different?
Perhaps. We're going to discuss this. The Radaka is going to talk about this at length, exactly what happened. But the Gemara sounds like Eliezer was wrong and Yonason was wrong. It says any omen which is not like theirs, don't worry, it's not an omen. Which sounds like theirs is an omen, and it's like a double negative. That's sometimes the Gemara does that just to trick us and get us English mages mad. But nonetheless, it means that they were wrong. Yonason, for some reason, created this strange omen that I'll fight or won't fight depending on if they tell us to come or for them to come to us. Who is Eliezer ben Avraham? Eliezer is in Parshas Chayisara, that by the well, right? He said that, you know what? I can't figure out. This is before Frumster and J-Date. I don't know who I should have Yitzchak marry. This is too hard. There's too many girls over here. I'll devise this crazy plan. Anyone who gives water, we ask them for water, and not only they give us water, they'll give our camels water. That'll be a proof that this is the woman who's befitting to marry Isaac, to marry Yitzchak. So that also sounds like Nichush. The Gemara says it is. That's an omen. That's something which is wrong. They shouldn't do. And if we look further in the Radak, we continue, and the Radak says, we see the part which is underlined, which is the next line, Amar Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha, that our sages of blessed memory tell us, Lo Sinachashu, that a person should not be engaged in sorcery, all sources of creating these types of omens. And if you, what does this mean? So it says, moving to the last word on the line, Ba'omer, a person says, Pito Nafla Mepiv. I have some very bad news. A piece of bread fell out of my mouth. Well, it might, Miss Manners might get upset, but if not only that, if you think that because bread fell out of your mouth, that a certain event will happen to you because of that, that's against the Torah. Or if a person says, Makolo Nafa Miyado, this is a terrible thing that's going to happen to me today. Why? Because my staff fell out of my hands. So it must be something's going to happen to me because my staff fell out of my hands. Svi Hatsiko. Or I have this a deer who ran by me. Or an Orev Karlo. A raven was calling out. I heard a raven. And that's going to be a good sign or a bad sign. Shoel Miemino. Nachash Mismolo. A fox I saw on the right side. This is terrible. Or imagine that you saw a snake on your left side. These are all different things that in those days people thought had meaning. Altislobi, don't begin with me. I don't want to be the first one, right? I don't want to be the first one to do it. Why shouldn't I begin doing something? Because Shacharsu, it's in the morning. It's a bad sign. If I do it in the morning, if I do something in the morning, I shouldn't do it. I'll wait until 12 o'clock. Oh, okay, now I can do it. The same activity. Rosh Chodesh, it's Rosh Chodesh today? It is Rosh Chodesh today, right? And so I better not do this. It's Rosh Chodesh, so it's an auspicious time so that I'm going to win, I'm going to get something for him. Motzi Shamasu, it's Saturday night. All these different examples is brought down in the Gemara. That's considered to be Nichush. Those are considered to be omens. And we're not allowed to believe in omens. But rather, we're supposed to believe in Hashem. And Hashem running the world. And the fact that a snake is on this side, or the black cat over there, that doesn't necessarily determine whether or not something good or bad will happen to you. You have to have the bitachon and the faith in Hashem. That's really what counts.
So therefore, the Urim and the Thummim,
right? Yes.
Were the tool of Hashem, so to say. Was the tool of Hashem? I mean, they did consult the Urim and Thummim.
Right, and that did tell us the future. The question is, why would we be allowed to do that if not for the fact that God Himself said that we were allowed to? Right, exactly. But these are all methods, I guess, which is the same issue of having a king altogether, was that we don't want to get involved with God. We want to do our own thing. That's the problem of why we wanted a king, was because we didn't want this relationship with Hashem. We wanted to be able to be alone. We wanted to be able to fight our own battles and in turn be able to do whatever we wanted to, ethically or not.
So these Hasidic rabbis who had an amulet and so
Certainly, we could not possibly want to believe that would be nichush, because that would be against the Torah. So there has to be some logic behind it. There has to be some significance to that. So maybe we'll understand why they do it, maybe not, but I want to be able to maybe address that question indirectly by asking another question. And that is, how could we possibly understand that Yonasan made this mistake? How could we possibly understand that Eliezer made this mistake? They were involved in relationships with great tzaddikim, with very righteous individuals. How can we possibly understand that they would have violated nichush, creating omens? They would have known they're not supposed to do this. How could they possibly have done such a thing? So, the answer which is presented in the Sefer Mishpat Sot Zahav, the Ran tells us a very important concept about omens in general, which will answer this question about how could Eliezer do it, how could Yonasan do it, and also give us an understanding is when are omens not allowed, and when perhaps are they permissible. So he says like this, it's only a few lines, I'm going to share them with you. He says, the Ran tells us, Dikivan shasimen sh'asa Yonasan, the sign which Yonasan made about coming close or going, them coming to us, this was actually something which has some logic. Which means, as we're going to see, if it's something which has no connection, there's no cause and effect, there's no correlation, that's considered to be the prohibition of an omen. However, if you could somehow logically explain the reason why you're saying this particular test, that there's some basis for it, that's not an omen. In fact, it's just a way to determine whether or not, in fact, you should fight them. It's a way to determine whether or not she is fit to marry Yitzchak. And he continues, Shem Haim, for example, if let's say these people were afraid. They were afraid to come. If they were afraid to come to us, which means they would say, come to me. That's what they, when they see us from afar, they say, come to me. Why are they saying come to us? Because they don't want to come to you because they're afraid to leave their area, their fortified, safe area. So therefore, that's not considered to be an omen. Rather, Yonasan interpreted that as a sign, shiyadam alatachtona, that their hands are below, that they're not, they don't feel secure in their in themselves. V'shah lo mesacheket lohem, and it's not a great time for them. And therefore, I have the ability, because of their fear, to be able to attack. So that they say, come to us, it shows their own insecurities within themselves, and therefore I'm able to attack. However, if they say, stay there, we're going to come to you, it shows that they have no fear. They can easily come, because when they come to us, they don't know that there's only two people. They'd be crazy only not two people. Maybe there's a whole army in the background. But if they come to us, it shows they have no fear. And therefore, that's a sign, and therefore, according to the Ran explains, that's not considered to be an omen, because there's logic behind it. So too, V'chein ha-simen sh'asa Eliezer. Why was that a good sign? Why is that not considered to be an omen? That's also something of Seichel. Why? Because she'im tiski l'hashkos oso v'eskim alav. Because if she agrees for some crazy reason, even there's all these strong, able-bodied men around the well that could do it themselves, right? Why don't you get up and do it yourself? Yeah, but for some reason, if she's willing to give water to the camels as well, that's a proof that she's a woman of tremendous chesed, a very kind woman, someone that doesn't look and say, well, why can't you do it? And that would be a very legitimate question. What do you mean? There's a bunch of guys here. You're asking this little girl to bring the water for the camels? You do it yourself. She never asked. So that was a sign that, in fact, she was a tzaddikus, that Rivka was a righteous woman. Therefore, says the Ran, that's not, there's no prohibition. That's not considered to be an omen at all. And therefore, the way to understand this is that the only time it's a prohibition of nichush, of an omen, is only in the situation where you're, the thing that you create has no logic whatsoever.
So the magical kind of
thing. Exactly, like the black cats or the things like that. or the broken mirror, all these things have no logic. Oh, I better not do this because, you know, I did this today. This happened to me. So that's considered to be nichush. That's an omen which the Torah says you should not believe in. However, if you can create some logical base to your reasoning, then that's okay. If we look over here, Rashi actually tells us all this. Rashi says on page 82, the bottom, he says, "V'im ko yomrei lav aleinu." If they say to us that we should come, we should come. That we should come to them. So what does that determine? Pachad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Belibam. It shows that Hashem placed within their hearts a tremendous amount of fear. The Yireim Lezuz Mimkomam. And they're too afraid to move from their place. So Rashi really answered that whole question. But I didn't want to do the Rashi, then I would have had a good question to begin with. But that's what Rashi says. That because Yonasan looked at this as a way to be able to determine are they afraid or not afraid, therefore, in fact, that's not considered to be a prohibition of an oath, of an omen. In fact, this is also a similar concept, and we're going to stop after this, is we find this also by the Meraglim, by the spies, that Moshe said a very strange thing. Moshe said, I want you to determine, are the cities in Israel fortified or open cities? So Rashi says, who cares? What's the difference if they're fortified? So you think, if they're fortified, that's a big problem. How are you going to be able to breach their walls? We can't attack them. They're too strong. They'll just keep shooting arrows at us and won't be able to do anything. But that's not what Moshe looked at. And that's not the message of high walls. High walls, high fortified walls means they're afraid. They're afraid and they need these walls to protect them from you. And therefore, if you see fortified walls, fortified cities, that will determine that the people in Israel are scared. And if you see an open area where there's no fortified walls, then fortified cities, then you know that, in fact, they feel very confident, very, very strong, very powerful. And one of the things that the Meraglim did, one of the spies did, is they came back, and what did they tell the Jewish people? That there's giants there, and the walls are thick, fortified, huge. So that was true. But the problem was, you could possibly say that they were strong nonetheless, but what they did was they packaged and marketed their message of what they saw, and they said, huge fortified walls, fortified cities, terrible, terrible, we'll never be able to defeat them. But the truth is, they could have gone, what did they do wrong? They said the truth. The answer is because they could have told the Jewish people, guess what? There's fortified cities. That proves that they're scared of us, and therefore we could defeat them. But instead, they instilled fear upon the Jewish people by saying that they're fortified cities, and if we can't attack them. So that was their mistake. However, that was also the message of Yonasan, that the message was that if they tell us to come to them, it shows that they're scared, and in fact, we're going to see next week that is what they're going to tell them, and therefore, because of this, Yonasan will attack. And we will see that the Jewish people will have a tremendous miracle, a tremendous victory. Stop here.